First, for the last two centuries, rapid changes in technology have been changing our inner lives, how and what we feel and what it means to think of ourselves as humans. Today, skeptics and mental health professionals ask questions like, are our smartphones hurting us more than they're helping us? Is Google making us stupid? Is social media making us narcissistic? Those kinds of concerns about technology have been around a lot longer than you might think. 19th century Americans were known to chop down telegraph and telephone poles because they considered them to be disruptive to their lives. Our next guests tell those stories and more in their new book. Luke Fernandez is an assistant professor in the School of Computing and co-director of the Tech Outreach Center at Weber State University in Ogden, Utah. Susan J. Matt is presidential distinguished professor of history at Weber State. Their book is called Bored, Lonely, Angry, Stupid: Changing Feelings About Technology from the Telegraph to Twitter. Both of you, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much.
Glad to be here.
Well, Susan, let's start with you. What made you decide to dive in with this long-term view of how we react to new things like communication and information technologies?
Well, Luke and I both teach at a university, and several years ago, almost a decade ago, we noticed that our students seemed more distracted, and we thought it might have to do with technology. Luke applied for a grant and got it, and we taught a class exploring that, and we realized it wasn't just that our students were more distracted because of technology, but that other changes were happening to their personalities and psychology. Since I'm a historian, I was interested to see, is this just something that caused by social media, or are there longer stories to be told about how our technologies have transformed ourselves? And indeed, these stories are not just narratives that began 20 years ago, but in fact, the telegraph has changed us, the telephone has changed us. So we want to uncover the continuities and the discontinuities between past and present.
One running theme, though, in the book, Luke, that you say is kind of different in some ways is over time, we've felt like there are fewer and fewer limits on us, on what we have access to, on our abilities to communicate with the world. And that sounds like a good thing in some ways, but it doesn't always play out that way. Can you talk about how this kind of access changes the way we relate to the world?
Well, you know, we track six different emotions or mental states in the book: narcissism, loneliness, boredom, attention, awe, and anger. And, you know, we studied this over the course of 10 years, and we're trying to find some sort of commonalities between all of these emotions. And we decided what it really was this sense of sort of increasing sense of limitlessness, that we've become more sort of narcissistic over the last 200 years. That we're less tolerant of being alone, that we want more friends than ever before, that we're accustomed to want limitless entertainment, that we think that we can pay attention to more things, and that we're also in some ways more tolerant of anger than we were in the past. So this is sort of the connecting theme between all of these different six disparate stories about emotions.
I want to start digging into some of those emotions anyway. And Susan, let's start with that narcissism that Luke mentioned. We didn't always use that word necessarily, but even with the rise of things like being able to take pictures of photographs and mirrors, there were concerns that this was increasing our vanity. Can you talk about how we started to think about our self-presentation with those two pieces of technology getting more common?
For sure. You know, for generations, theology had taught people that you should not be vain, you should not be proud, you should be humble and meek and aware of your frailties and also of your mortality. When people began to have access to photography, the first photography came to America in 1839, people began to come into photo studios, and there was a real debate over whether you should go get your picture taken. What was unique about photography was it democratized portraiture. Up to this point, you had to be pretty well off to have a picture painted of yourself. Some people thought photography would cure people of vanity because it wasn't as forgiving as an artist's hands who would smooth out your imperfections. It would show you in all your glaring reality. In fact, people became pretty addicted to photography and to trying to present themselves in the best light possible in those photo studios, engaging in all sorts of tricks with 19th century photographers to make themselves look better, from having fake ankles hanging under their dress to posing with books they'd clearly never read. So photography certainly heightened people's preoccupations with self-presentation. Mirrors also got democratized in the late 19th century. They've been pretty expensive, but by the end of the century, they're being mass-produced. And suddenly you can see in your house, in almost every room, how you look. And these are kind of instructing people. These technologies are instructing people to care about how they look and how they present themselves to the world.
But you also mentioned a point in the book that I thought was really interesting. Frederick Douglass is regarded by a lot of people as the most photographed human of the 19th century. And he took this and you write, really intentionally used that presentation, saying, okay, I'm getting these pictures taken of me to counteract the sort of the minstrel images and the stereotyped images of Black people in the United States. So people used it intentionally in some interesting ways. Can you talk about that, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, often when we give presentations about this, I'll query the audience and ask them, who do you think was the most photographed person of the 19th century? And Frederick Douglass is not who people usually try to guess. They usually say Lincoln. And yeah, you know, Susan was just talking about all this form of photography that sometimes we use the anachronistic term Victorian selfies. There was a lot of self-portraiture in the 19th century that if you look at it, looked very vain. And you can use those kind of pejorative terms to describe it. You know, people on the East Coast having these aspirational qualities to go west and become gold miners and then getting their pictures taken in front of big sacks of gold, even though they haven't been there yet. And similarly, those pictures that Susan was already talking about, women pretending to be more literary. But they weren't all of this portraiture wasn't vain, and Frederick Douglass is a sort of epitomizes that, because while he did have his picture taken an awful lot, it wasn't really sort of out of self-interest so much as you said, to try to counteract these negative stereotypes that people had at the time of Black people. And by showing a much more sort of positive images of himself, he hoped to sort of counteract those stereotypes.
We're talking to Luke Fernandez and Susan Matt, authors of the book Bored, Lonely, Angry, Stupid, Changing Feelings About Technology from the Telegraph to Twitter. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a piece of technology or communications technology in particular that came about in your lifetime that you made things better, worse, a little bit of both? Do you think kind of intentionally about how you use, say, social media or selfies? Call 800-642-1234. Susan, since the two of you wrote this book, we have this pandemic. And you had a recent piece, I think it was in the Washington Post, correct me if I'm wrong, but looking at you know, how we can use some of the lessons, especially when it comes to boredom in your book during this difficult time. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, you know, as Luke mentioned, 19th century Americans thought about their feelings differently than we did. And two we focused on in recent articles are boredom and loneliness, which seem appropriate for the pandemic. 19th century Americans were much more accustomed to solitude and to tedium, two things many of us are getting really familiar with during quarantining, self-isolating periods of the pandemic. So Americans kind of assumed these were part of the nature of life, that you were not always going to be constantly stimulated and entertained. And in fact, the word boredom in America didn't exist until the mid-19th century. Since its emergence and since modern psychologists have begun to think about boredom and modern entertainment industries have tried to make boredom a problem, we've become much more accustomed to constant stimulation, entertainment, excitement, amusement parks, movies. And so we're kind of conditioned to want more and more excitement all the time. So the pandemic has really thrown us for a loop. And we think looking back to earlier generations, emotional strategies may give us some guidance on how to cope.
Yeah, Luke, what kind of guidance do you think from your book that will help us maybe recapture, I don't know if we'd say a love of boredom and isolation, but not necessarily viewing them as negatives in and of themselves?
Right, yeah, I don't think we want to be nostalgic for the 19th century, but certainly if an iconic figure like Henry David Thoreau, who built a cabin beside Walden Pond, and then proceeded to spend the next 2 years of his life alone, writing some of the more, you know, canonical texts of American thought, is one inspiration we could draw from, you know. And for Thoreau, this experience of being alone wasn't something that he regarded negatively. It was something that he celebrated. And I think part of what we're trying to do here is to sort of recall that there's more than one way to experience the experience of being alone. You can describe it with different words. In the 19th century, if you look on Google Ngram, for example, you can see this word usage across time. In the 19th century, the word solitude was used a lot more, whereas now, today, we use the term loneliness. And so if we think about our vocabulary and the words that we use to describe these experiences, and maybe we go back and try to use those words from the 19th century, we might be able to regard these trying times in perhaps a more positive light than we are when we just resort to, you know, our 21st century vocabularies.
We're talking to Susan Matt and Luke Fernandez, co-authors of the book Bored, Lonely, Angry, Stupid, Changing Feelings About Technology from the Telegraph to Twitter. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think technology has changed what it means to be and to feel human? How do you think it changes the way you feel? Do you worry about your relationship or our relationship to technology, social media, smartphones, and more? Do you feel like the ways we connect together make us feel disconnected sometimes? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We pick up our conversation with the co-authors of the book Bored, Lonely, Angry, Stupid, Changing Feelings About Technology from the Telegraph to Twitter. Susan Matt is a professor of history. Luke Fernandez, assistant professor in the School of Commuting, both at Weber State University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you worry about how things like smartphones, cell phones, the old phone changed our lives, the way we communicate with each other? Do you worry about social media? Do you feel like you spend too much time on it, or others around you spend too much time on social media without getting much out of it? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Susan, let's talk about social media. It comes up in a lot of the different emotions you talk about in the book, and a lot of mixed feelings about it. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people do both at the same time. How do you weigh the impact of our use of social media these days?
Well, you know, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There are lots of things not to like about it. And I'm kind of a techno skeptic. Luke is not. But we end up finding that when we did interviews with people from across the country, there were a lot of upside as well as down. For instance, I think a lot of us feel like social media may distance us from people, but in our conversations with immigrants, it was very clear how important things like FaceTime and Skype were to reach across borders when borders are closed. So we obviously see the positive. We worry that maybe sometimes it does make us feel like we are less aware of our limits than might be healthy.
Can you talk about the idea of being, intentional, Luke, about how we use a new kind of technology, whether that's, you know, sitting down in a camera studio in 1850 or taking a selfie in 2020, actually thinking about our relationship with the technology instead of just letting it wash over us?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, our book is not presented as a self-help book. I mean, it's a history book. But I think that we hope that when people read it, it can help to foster more intentionality. Because if you understand, or if you learn a little bit about the history of these different emotions and how they've been reshaped by technology and the world around us, perhaps we can use them in ways that are more intentional. We can recognize that it's more perilous or hazardous aspects and keep that those at bay and leverage their more positive aspects. I mean, I think one example of this, for example, and you can sort of disaggregate it according to which emotion you're talking about. You know, we don't want to just talk about it in aggregate. You can unpack it. You can talk about, well, how does it affect my narcissism? How does it affect the way, does it make me more lonely, more bored? How does it affect my attention? One that I think doesn't get a lot of play, you know, in the media, but that we've focused on a bit, is how does it affect our ability to experience awe? And so asking these questions of ourselves in regard to specific emotions, I think, can make us speak with a bit more sort of precision and granularity about the way these technologies are affecting us, and then maybe use them with more intentionality.
Talking to Susan Matt and Luke Fernandez. They're the authors of the book Bored, Lonely, Angry, Stupid, Changing Feelings About Technology from the Telegraph to Twitter. Let's bring out a caller now. Ron is with us in Crandon. Ron, hi.
Hi. I was just wanted to comment on Walden by Thoreau. It always amazed me that even though the technology that he was talking about is so archaic now, the comments that he makes about it sound like they could have been made today. And where you're talking about changing views, you know, his views of the speed of information, turning trivial news into something important and changing the face of things. Like I said, if you read it without context, you'd think that he was talking about things today.
Ron, thanks a lot for the call. Susan, what do you think?
Well, you know, he does have a wonderful quote saying, you know, we're building a telegraph to connect Maine to Texas, but it may well be that Maine and Texas have nothing useful to say to each other. Or that's an approximation of the quote. But the point is that not in every case is more connectivity the answer to all our woes. And we do know how often there is a lot of triviality that gets exchanged, as well as a lot of important material. But his hesitations were very timely. He also worries about people who go and check the mail all the time, which I often remember when I'm looking online. He thought you didn't have a very robust sense of self if you had to go to the post office all the time to look for new affirmation.
Thanks a lot for the call, Ron. We'll go to Carl now in Milton. Carl, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on something your guest said a few minutes ago. In regards to social media, just making us less aware of our limits. And I was thinking about calling and kind of saying that before I heard her say that. And then I thought, yeah, I really resonate with that. I see that as a big problem because we're all exposed to all of the world's problems, essentially. And kind of the format of social media is, you know, it's asking you to comment, to you know, chime in and give your two cents in terms of what should be done about X or Y. And I don't think that's necessarily healthy. We have limits, and certainly we all should be, you know, working to make a better world, but we can't all solve every problem together.
Carl, thanks a lot for that call. Does that fit into the narcissism concept, Luke? I know about this problem, and therefore the world needs to know what I think about it.
Yeah, I was thinking more of our attention chapter there. Certainly, I think there's a connection to narcissism, but what the caller was talking about is, and in terms of intentionality too, one of the myths that developed in the late 19th, early 20th century was this idea of sort of the 10% myth, that we were only using 10% of our brains, and that if we just sort of were a bit more mindful, that we could use the rest of it. And I think one thing that also we tend to think is that we have unlimited degrees of attention that we can devote ourselves to, you know, that we can multitask and do many, many things at once. When in reality, our attention is limited. We can only pay attention to so many things. And with social media, there is this tendency. I mean, because social media companies make money off of hijacking our attention or getting our attention, that we should be cognizant of the fact that Attention is not a limitless resource, even though oftentimes we think of it that way, and that we should sort of guard it closely. And then if we do, then we maybe need to be a little more careful about when we use social media and when we don't, and that we don't get into these sort of unhealthy habits of engaging in doom scrolling or just sort of endless scrolling, because, you know, when we do that, at the end of the day, you know, you end up feeling like you haven't really done all that much, because all you've done is let your attention be taken from you by Facebook or Twitter.
In our last minute or so, Susan, has all the research that went into this book changed the way you relate to technology?
You know, it has. Both Luke and I agree that knowing how different models of being have changed over time, and knowing that we have some agency in deciding how to allocate our attention or how much attention to give to ourselves, how many social connections we should seek, whether we should really value constant stimulation. All of this research has really made us mindful about how we think about our own feelings, and wondering if there isn't a better way to act on them and shape them in the future.
It's a good place to leave it. Susan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Luke, thanks for being with us. We've been talking to Luke Fernandez, assistant professor in the School of Computing and co-director of the Tech Outreach Center at Weber State University in Ogden, Utah, and Susan J. Matt, presidential distinguished professor of history at Weber State. They're co-authors of the book we've been talking about, Bored, Lonely, Angry, Stupid, Changing Feelings About Technology from the Telegraph to Twitter.